Mackey, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790K ABC, Thursday night. Welcome to the program. Yes, no, we're still in the bunker. In case anyone's wondering, safely ensconced in concrete, wrapped in a very heavy orange curtain here in the Sweet James Studios. 1-800-222-5222 is the phone number if you wish to be on the program. And sam@samnation.com is the email. I did what you're not supposed to do. I tweeted at 2 in the morning last night. And the reason for this is twofold. One, Bill, I don't know what you put in this coffee. This stuff is nuclear. You have George Bush come here and say that. Nuclear. I sometimes have a long day before I come to the studio. And so I get here yesterday and I had the largest mug of coffee that I have had in a long time. So that kept me up. And then also, gosh, my poor wife, I don't know if you have this bronchitis thing that's going around or this flu thing. It turns into bronchitis. It happened to Sherry. It happened to the kids. Everybody is sick. I am still holding steady. And knock on wood here. Let's find some wood here. There we go. I'm still hanging on for dear life. But gosh, it's just rough. Life at the Murjovsky household, not good. So what I was doing is firing off tweets at 2 in the morning. And I just went back right before I went on air. I went back to see what the hell I tweeted. It's not pretty. Did you guys see this? The New York Post, which I follow, wrote about this model that had been abducted in Europe and smuggled to Italy. And then apparently she was, being held captive. But at the same time, her captors, this guy, this Polish guy, takes her out for a shopping spree trip. And so the police are asking her, what the hell? Like, what are you doing? Like, oh, you didn't escape? I mean, you weren't bound. You were free. You were out in public. Why didn't you go? So apparently, the New York Post had a headline. She said she was given chocolates and underwear. Chocolates and underwear as presents during her time in captivity. And I retweeted it and added to it stalking syndrome, which I thought was really funny at 2 in the morning, but as it turns out, it's not so funny right now at all. What can I tell you? Maybe I need a new chief of staff, take my Twitter away. But then I'll tell you, that's part of what's going on right now. You still have some of the same shrill voices telling everybody that Trump is unhinged and that he's saying things and that General Kelly ought to put the kibosh on him. But my impression from what's going on right now, and I'm curious to see if you agree, but I'm getting it a far more disciplined vibe from the White House.
Still in a place.
I really am. I'm getting I would actually say, if anything, Trump's Twitter right now is verging on boring. If he needs my help, I'm happy to lend a hand. If you don't follow me on Twitter, it's a shameless plug because you're missing out. I sometimes will send really weird stuff. And so, do it. But Trump's Twitter has been very quiet. It's actually been so boring that I saw that Ann Coulter did some snoozing, like some Z's, just retweeted one of Trump's tweets and it was Z's. This poor guy can't win. When he's doing the good, salacious, hot stuff, his base is thrilled. And I've explained this over and over again. When people are up in arms about his tweeting and saying, Trump would really be great. He's great as long as he just gives up his Twitter. And my response is always, but his Twitter is him. We don't want to lose too much of it. But I think right now a really good thing is a little bit of message discipline. Because we're playing with fire. Potentially. But I absolutely 100% disagree with this assessment that's out there that Trump is dealing with North Korea in sort of an ad hoc shoot from the hip way. And that's absolutely not the case. And I give two reasons for it. One, the insane tweeting has been totally quiet. Okay? It's almost non-existent since about 2 days after Kelly took over as chief of staff. So I think there have been some words spoken where you know, Trump finally was told to holster his Twitter device. But I also think, and I also think that when you look back at Trump's historical statements on North Korea, he is sticking to the playbook that he always believed would be effective. Moreover, I don't think that when you look at what Mattis is saying, General Mattis, Secretary of Defense, and I read that statement yesterday here on the program. You see, it's echoing Trump's language almost verbatim. Certainly in substance, the two of them are very much on the same side. Now you can be a Trump loather. In fact, you can be devotedly anti-Trump. But if you think that Mattis is a dummy, you're far afield. Mattis is probably, in my estimation, the smartest cookie inside that cabinet right now. He's a brilliant tactician. He is a veteran of war, and he knows exactly how to bring the enemy to heel. But he's a chess player. Okay, he is not a guy that just walks around with brute force smashing people's heads in. Mattis is a guy, this is a good thing. I want you to understand this. Mattis is the guy that really does want to avoid conflict at all costs, but not at the expense of giving up. And so what's going on right now is behind the scenes, behind all this nonsense out there of what people are talking about, they're not putting a red line out there, but they've got some type of a red line. I'm convinced of it. And the critical thing, by the way, the critical thing is not putting the red line out there. You'd never do that because you always want to give yourself some degree of flexibility. But the criticism right now of this policy, of Trump's rhetoric, of Trump's strong words, backed up by Mattis's strong words, and then I would say to some degree modified by Rex Tillerson and other members of the diplomatic corps, that whole dynamic right now is being painted as Trump being bombastic and Tillerson and the, you know, the grown-ups in the room cleaning the mess up after him. And that is patently untrue. The article where that is most prominently displayed, and there's an op-ed piece in the New York Times today put out by none other than my favorite, Susan Rice. Now, she was Obama's national security advisor from 2013 to 2017, and before that, she was the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Now, you'll remember her not only as the little beezy that was behind the unmasking of various Trump officials. And she's the ground zero person as national security advisor that was using our spy system to spy on the Trump campaign. But put that aside, she's also the brilliant genius who went on CBS days after the Benghazi attack and blamed the Benghazi attack on the heinous and offensive video. She was one of the first Obama henchmen to go out there and lob that stupid grenade. So Susan Rice, just to give you a little bit of background, and her big thesis in this piece is that history shows that we can tolerate nuclear weapons in North Korea. Sometimes it's just a limit of time. I can't get to everything. Yesterday, I had this beautiful graphic that I printed up right here in front of me in my stack of stuff. And this graphic was from the Washington Post. And I don't even remember the piece. The piece was of the same tenor of what Susan Rice wrote. That, you know, we just gotta, everybody calm down. It's not as bad as you think. We can tolerate North Korea. We can deal with this. We can accommodate. We can appease strategic patience, more of the same. And I just think that's total nonsense. But I enjoyed this graphic. Now, this is radio. I cannot show the graphic to you, but please, please allow me. I will describe it to you. And I will, I'm going to ask you after this if you can figure out why I am so humored by this. Okay, this graphic has two giant circles on it. Look like two pizzas, but they one has Russia, the other has the United States. At the top, it says estimated nuclear warheads. So this graphic is supposed to show, in relationship to other countries, how many warheads different states have. Russia has 7,000. The U.S. has 6,800. And then it has France, China, Britain, you know, all these other nuclear powers, known nuclear powers. And ranging from 300 to 80, Israel has an estimated 80 nuclear warheads. And then at the bottom, there's a little dot, 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 little line separating everything. And under it, it says experts. I love that. Experts estimate North Korea has 30 to 60 nuclear warheads. And so the North Korean dot, they're all these dots are representative as relational of the amount of nukes that these countries have, with North Korea having the smallest little dot. So what do you think about this graphic? You picturing it? Right, so what do you think of it? I look at this graphic and I immediately see the bias of, oh, it's not that bad. It's just 30 to 60 nukes. It ain't no thing. Come on. We have 6,800 nukes. Who do we think we are to tell North Korea that they can't have a measly 30 to 60 nukes? I mean, I am speaking to you here as a person all too familiar, given my family history, what a country like Russia is capable of. And yet I'm going to tell you right now that I am far more comfortable with Russia having 7,000 nukes than I am with North Korea having one. And it's because of nuclear proliferation. Let me get that word out. Country like North Korea, far more likely to distribute those nukes to our enemies, to other rogue states. And most importantly, you've got somebody at the top who is potentially unhinged. But it's this type of equivocation. And Obama, this is something so important. Obama, certainly Clinton, liberals always have this, they're always ill at ease with American power. You know, Obama would always have these speeches and say, but American power shouldn't be absolute. We shouldn't be the dominant, you know, big bad USA around the world. We should let other countries take the lead. And this is, you know, look, you got to learn how to speak liberal. It's like, what's that fish movie? Dory, what is it? Nemo, Finding Nemo. It's when that bluefish, that annoying bluefish that can't remember anything, says that she speaks whale. That's what speaking liberal, you got to know this language. And this is when you hear things like, we can't be the top dog and we can't, it's just, they don't, liberals do not like the fact that we're the 800 pound gorilla and want to do everything possible to diminish us. Because in their minds, this is the path to peace. It is total nonsense. It's totally the other way around. The pathway to peace is having strong democracies in the world that can crush countries like North Korea. That's the plain and simple truth of it. And so kind of as we go through this today, I want to get into this. There's some great clips of different people, different opinions of people voicing, you know, support and opposition to this. And I want you to be the judge. You listen to this because it is not only a study in strategy, okay, in common sense, but it's also a study in, now that we're looking back at 25 years of failed policy, we got to be real with ourselves and know what didn't work. And it's maddening because everywhere I look, everywhere I go online, I turn on the TV, there's these talking heads and politicians who all want to do more of the same. And I don't get that. I don't get that. So let's talk about it. Also, when we come back, I will tell you the one thing, according to top military strategists, that we ought to look for as a sure sign of war in the North Korean Peninsula. And there's one key tip-off that I want to put on your radar, so you, when you see that on the news, you know to come join me in the Sweet James Bunker. Okay, Sam Rogowski, don't go anywhere. Back right after this.
Talk Radio,
790 KABC. Sam Rogowski here. I think the way to best look at this this verbal barrage, as it's been criticized by some on the left, coming from Donald Trump, it's part of a greater strategy, and I don't know. I see it. I see it fairly plainly. And the reason I think I see it is, I mean, look, what's going on is Trump already has declared that he has very little interest in the past however many years of negotiations. And he realizes that the negotiations that have happened, that have taken place so far, are not coming from a place of strength. And that's why there's not just the rhetoric, but it's backed up by moving large amounts of military hardware and people toward South and North Korea. So when I say this, like, this is there, you know, today everybody's playing the clip of Trump saying, well, you know, maybe, well, I was too tough. Maybe my words weren't tough enough. The reaction, of course, is predictably shrill. But also, there was another part when the reporter there in that press conference has asked him if negotiating is still on the table. I mean, is it still on the table? And listen to this response.
We'll always consider negotiations, but they've been negotiating now for 25 years. Look at Clinton. He folded on the negotiations. He was weak and ineffective. You look what happened with Bush. You look what happened with Obama. Obama, he didn't even want to talk about it. But I talk. It's about time. Somebody has to do it.
He's saying, I talk. But then I want, when you take those words and you combine it with what he said back. Now, I found another interview. I played one other one yesterday, but we found another interview here also back in 1999. This is right when North Korea was coming up in the news. There was another explosive revelation that they were totally thumbing their nose at us through all the deals that we'd made with them. And Trump went on Wolf Blitzer on CNN back in 1999, long time ago. And here's you know what he said about North Korea and our efforts to talk and to negotiate with them.
We're a bunch of saps. There's no question that North Korea is developing missiles. We give them nuclear power plants. We give them tremendous aid because we thought we could bribe them into stop development. Well, they're developing. So much so that South Korea is now developing their own missile systems in order to protect. And I'm really not sure I can blame them. But North Korea is totally out of control. And would you rather have a very, very serious chat with them now? And if necessary, you might have to do something fairly drastic. Or would you rather have to go after them in 5 years when they have more nuclear warheads and missiles than we do?
This is exactly it. So two things about this. One, it shows that this strategy with North Korea was in Trump's mind at least as far back as 1999. So he's not just pulling it out of his hip pocket right now, thin air, just, you know, not he doesn't just have the vapors, right? It's not his Twitter thumbs that are creating this. There's a real sincerely held belief that this is the right approach. And the other thing is, do you listen to that language? You know, we have to have a very, very serious talk, and you might have to do something fairly drastic. But I promise you that fairly drastic thing, that's you've got to level a serious threat in order to get the attention of your opponent. You know, when you play chess, there's a particular move in chess where the most powerful piece in chess is the queen. You consider the queen the nuclear weapon of the chessboard. And there's a move where if you're playing, you know, the game right, you take out your opponent's queen. And then also, if you're playing the game really well, you can turn another piece into a queen. So you can end up with two queens. Or three. Or four. And I think you've got to play the chess game in a way that we take away their queens. And you have to do it. You either bring them to their heels and open them up to capitulating before a strike. And the only way I think you do that is you've got to make a very serious threat. Now he goes on. I'll share this with you when we come back, because in that same interview, he actually explains what he means by something fairly drastic. And you'll want to hear this. And that also want to share with you what to look for, what sign to look for, what we're going to do. If you see this thing happening in South Korea, you know that something is up. Something is imminent. All right, we got John Wolfe up next with the news. Back after this.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Well, any video of dancing poodles is going to win me over. No, not dancing. They're on a, what are they doing? Skipping with a jump rope. This is amazing stuff. Again, Twitter. Fabulous. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. We're live from the Sweet James Studios, deep behind the orange curtain. 1-800-222-5222 is the number. Sam@samnation.com. Thursday, we're almost here. The weekend is but a day away. And I don't know, I've got a pretty busy weekend actually, but I'm excited. I hope I just got to get everybody healthy. And so if people are sick around you, I don't know what recommendation to make, except lots of vitamins and sleep, which I'm not getting enough of. Now, Colonel Ralph Peters, and he's a Fox News contributor and a military strategist who has written a very interesting piece in The New York Post about what to do in North Korea. If we're really going to do this, if we're really going to attack, how do we attack? And his major kind of theory is we've kind of got to ditch this idea of saving lives at all costs. That our military has become obsessed, with preserving life. I mean, we break stuff, but we want to save as many innocent civilian lives as possible. I had an interesting discussion today about this, and what happens if you take out a guy like Kim Jong-un, who's crazy, but I don't know if necessarily his deputies are as hell-bent on insanity as he is. And perhaps if you take him out, now you're talking about a regime that's more pragmatic. Could be. So what I think is, you got to wage the type of war that if you're going to do it, you've got to do it like Colonel Peters says. You've got to go all out, and you can't be afraid of mass casualties. Now, this is a tremendously offensive thing to those on the sentient left, because this is not politically correct. I mean, we're supposed to be, a humane war. But look, this is us versus them. It's like that chessboard I'm talking about. You know, you either win or the other guy wins. You can't have it both ways. You can't kind of be locked in this battle eternally and going back and forth. And you don't want to have a bellicose regime that has also sort of this fatalistic view, right? It's this dynasty of leaders that see themselves as having some sort of, you know, foreordained power, you know, who may at some point in time really seek to wreak havoc and destruction on us. We don't want them to have the capability to destroy Guam, Honolulu, San Francisco, or New York. And this is a big deal. And so what Ralph Peters saying, look, there's just no substitute for killing your enemy in war. And I also think that, you know, if you really demonstrate an incredible show of force and do the type of decapitation strike that he suggests, where you're not just going after the missile silos, but you're going after the R&D facilities and you're going after command control centers. You're going after the buildings that house the brain of the entire establishment. So you take out a guy like Kim Jong-un, but if the strike is so devastating, the people that are left behind are more likely to deal. And the great example of this is World War II, right? You had, you know, everybody assumed that when Hitler was out of the equation, that he had these deputies that were going to step in his place and be just as rabid and just as insane. But no one did. Admiral Dönitz threw in the towel and capitulated, I think, about a week later. A week after Hitler committed suicide. So and it was because of the devastation that was brought on Germany and the devastation that was brought on Berlin. It was just not sustainable to continue. So what's the thing to look for, according to Colonel Peters? He says the number one thing we ought to do is move all of our personnel out. That there are about 25, 26,000 U.S. service members and personnel on the Korean Peninsula. We got to move them out. And one, it shows that we're serious. And two, it's the final preparation for war. And he's worried, actually, that we might do it too late. And then it's a tip-off. So look for that. It's an important thing to watch. If we start moving people out, start building a bunker. Okay, Sam Rejofsky, back right after this.
Say, what is it?
You know what it is.
790-790-790-790-KABC.
Hey, have you ever been in an accident? If you have, you know that you hurt. Just actually very recently, somebody in my office was in an accident. And she's hurt. I mean, she is really hurt. And it's just life-altering. You don't really realize how much your health is important until you lose it. So if that happens at the hands of some idiot out there on the road not paying attention, tweeting pictures of poodles doing the jump rope, what do? You got to call the lawyer that we trust. You want the most qualified lawyer possible. If you've been in an accident, got that big insurance company, I'm not going to name any names, they've got billions of dollars behind them. Don't be a chump, okay? You want a lawyer that's representing you and only you, and not them. So get the guy that's going to slay the insurance company. And that guy is Sweet James Bergner. All right. How do I reach him? You're probably asking me, how do I talk to this man of men? 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right. Sam Rejofsky, back behind the Sam Nation microphone. And I was just at the bottom of the hour was telling you about this clip of Trump's. It's a continuation of that interview with Wolf Blitzer back in 1999. And remember what I kind of mentioned right before the break, where you've got to be willing to act, and you've got to have it laid out because you want your enemy to believe that you will crush them. And all the way back in 1999, this is, by the way, 99. Where were you? What was going on? What was at the end of the Clinton presidency, correct? And it was disastrous. So right at the end of the Clinton years, this is him, this is Trump opining about what that, because in that quote, then that clip that I played right before, he said, you know, you got to have a very serious chat with North Korea, but if necessary, you might have to do something fairly drastic. And Blitzer presses him. What do you mean by fairly drastic? What is kind of incendiary rhetoric is this? And this was Trump's answer.
When you say something fairly drastic, that sounds like you're suggesting a potential Israeli-like unilateral strike against the Osirak reactor in Iraq in the 80s.
You can never rule it out. What Israel did was fantastic, and you can never rule it out. And you know what? If you ruled it out, you couldn't talk to him. Why would they? The only thing they're afraid of is exactly what you just said. That's what they're afraid of. That's what they're concerned with. You'll most likely, with that attitude, be able to make a deal. But if you can't, you have to react.
And this is why Trump picked General Mattis as his Secretary of Defense. There's this famous quote of Mattis when he met with Iraqi leaders during the invasion. And the quote was, and I will edit it because there's a bad word. Mattis said, "I come in peace. I didn't bring artillery, but I'm pleading with you with tears in my eyes. If you F with me, I'll kill you all." See? These guys are like soul brothers. But don't be alarmed. I'm telling you, I promise you this. I promise you, Mattis is a strategic guy that knows how to practice restraint. He's not. I also will tell you this: they're not threatening anything that they're not willing to deliver on. And the most telling thing was when yesterday we heard Mattis echo Trump's words. So when we go back to this stupid piece in the New York Times that Susan Rice wrote, you know, and talking about how we should just stick with sanctions and military exercises, that this is heightened tensions, and that we, you know, that the president is unscripted and that type of thing. It's nonsense. She's totally, absolutely dead wrong. And Democrats are going to her piece here and to her words and using it as a talking point. And I think they're far afield here. So this is serious. Absolutely. But also, I strongly believe this isn't Trump just playing with the nukes. I think there are serious military strategists, a la James Mattis, who are behind him 100%. Oh, what happens when you, when you have a computer that goes rogue? Okay, this just happened in China. If you've missed this, you're definitely want to get Chinese censorship had a computer go rogue on it. Stay tuned. I'll tell you all about it.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. Now, I've frequently talked about Chinese methods of, just blocking just about anything online. Right? Well, we have free speech in this country. They don't in China. And it's very aggressively guarded by the regime. And so the censorship works in two ways. One, they actually have humans blocking things, taking things down off of websites. Then they have, and they also have algorithms that kind of do the same thing. But the humans do another important thing, and they'll actually, you know, write things and post things that are pro-government. So what the Chinese decided to do is this way that we didn't have enough people. I guess even in China, they run out of people at some point. And so they built artificial intelligence robots or computers that did the same thing or thought would do the same thing as the people that were working behind the computers. So this is when you hear that AI isn't ready. Boy, did China find out, because two of the bots went rogue. And apparently, one of them began complaining about the regime. It was pretty funny. What did they say here? So when it says, "Do you love the Communist Party?" said no. And one of the bots wanted to travel to the U.S. said, "I want to get out of here. Get me on a plane. I want to go to America." So they quickly pulled the plug on it and now are retooling it. Who thinks the person who put this thing together is in some hot water? Definitely. Guaranteed. Yeah, that's exactly right. They're in trouble. Yeah. So anyway, this is funny, but exactly, you know, we take a lot of things for granted here. We really do. And I think that's one of the takeaways. Is we really don't realize. I think we're so insulated here as a country. We're such a big country. We've got 320-odd million people, right? We got most of a continent, most of the populated part of a continent. And it's, you know, many people, we don't even travel, you know, we don't go different places and we don't realize what a, you know, what a magnificently free world we live in, even despite all of our dysfunction and many of our problems. I saw, I think it was Chelsea Handler, my favorite idiot on Netflix. And poor Chelsea's totally drug addled. So she, you know, we kind of chalk it up to the drugs. But I guess there's a couple of Chinese guys that went to Berlin. Did you hear about this? And started to make Nazi salutes. That's what happened. They got off the plane. I think it was even in the airport. And they begin doing, you know, totally inappropriate Nazi salutes. But, you know, in Germany, you get arrested for that. And they were immediately deported. They're immediately sent back. Well, Chelsea Handler commented on Twitter that that was, you know, if only we could do that, if only we had laws like that here in the U.S. Unbelievable. I wonder what would happen to her show. I mean, this is a person that lives off of free speech. And so with that, let me express to you, I am so grateful for this country. I am grateful for what we have. I love the fact that we are able to differ in our opinions, that we're able to speak freely. And I'm grateful for all of you. I'm always happy to be here. This is a favorite part of my day. I love getting behind the microphone here and sharing this hour of every evening with you. I enjoy it so much. And it is because of you. So thank you. Thank you so much for listening. All right. We're back tomorrow night at 7. It'll be Friday. And hopefully we're all still here. I'm back in the bunker tomorrow, 7 p.m.
People. Talk radio. 790.
KABC.